League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Well, hello again. We are back for another edition of The Tottenham Way. So glad that you've joined us. I'm Marcus Buckland in the company of Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard and Tom Allnutt, a.k.a. T.A. of The Times. Tom Barkley, or T.B. from The Sun, is not here this week. He is still in Georgia following the under-21 competition. Now, since we last met a week ago, Spurs have signed a new keeper, and the creative midfield presence that we have been crying out for so long. So, welcome Vicario, welcome James Maddison, welcome back Dan after your week away. Let us start with marks out of 10 for the two new signings, as far as you're concerned.
Hi, Marcus. Well, I'll give Vicario a 7, just on the basis that I don't really know anything about him. I think my feeling on him, and I'm kind of looking forward to finding out a bit about him, obviously seeing him in action, getting to know what he's like. But I think I'm a bit disappointed that Spurs didn't go for David Raya, I've got to say. I mean, I think there's an obvious comparison with Maddison there, in that Raya is one of the top goalkeepers in the Premier League. Had a year left on his contract, is homegrown, but Spurs didn't want to pay 40 million for him. And Maddison's one of the top creative midfielders in the Premier League, homegrown, a year left on his contract, and Spurs did pay 40 million for him. So I'm not really sure why the club feels or appeared to feel that kind of they could go for a cheaper option when it came to a goalkeeper, but not the creative player. I mean, perhaps they think Vicario is as good as Raya, or will be as good, in which case, fair enough. But I was a little disappointed they didn't go for him, because I think he's a top goalkeeper, and would have, you know, immediately been a massive step up in that position. Vicario may well be, but we just don't know. So as I said, looking forward to sort of seeing him in action and getting to know him better. As for Maddison, I think it's a great signing. Really kind of almost surprised that Spurs have got him with seemingly relative ease. So in terms of marks out of 10, I think a 9. I think he's a really exciting player that everyone, all fans should be really looking forward to seeing.
And you have written an article in The Standard explaining that this is something Spurs have been planning for 8 years, which was a long old time.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say planning it for 8 years, but I know that Maddison was first on Spurs' radar when he was a Coventry player. So literally when he was a teenager, nearly the best part of a decade ago. David Pleat, who has always had Daniel Levy's ear and is very knowledgeable on the Football League, he has always been very across that, has deserved some credit in the Dele Alli signing, for example, and various other ones. He recommended Maddison to the club when he was still at Coventry. So Spurs obviously had a chance to get him from Coventry. They looked at him again when he went from Norwich to Leicester in 2018. But obviously at the time they would have had Eriksen and Dele at their peak. So didn't rival Leicester for him. And they looked at him last summer as well. Albeit he would have been very, very hard and very expensive to get out of Leicester. And Conte didn't really play with that type of player. So it would have been a non-starter, really. But yeah, this signing has been a long time coming, I think, for Spurs. And I can't help but feel that the timing kind of feels right. It feels like Maddison's in his prime, He's a more mature player on and off the pitch than he was a few years ago. And Spurs are kind of in a place now where they desperately, desperately need him. You know, they're really missing a player like him in the squad. Whereas, as I said, in 2018, they weren't. And certainly last summer, they weren't playing with a player like him in the side. So it feels like hopefully he'll be worth the wait.
Yeah, well, 16 out of 20 does suggest it's pretty good business. Just with regards to David Pleat, amazing knowledge. But has there ever been a man with better knowledge and yet a worst set of pronunciations for every player that he is talking about? I mean, he's extraordinary because he has an encyclopedic knowledge, and yet he probably even struggles to say Harry Kane. But listen, we pay homage to Pleaty, who's been one of the great characters of the past 25 years or so. TA, you spoke about Vicario last week and the fact that there is a lot of potential. He is highly regarded in Italy, so maybe Spurs feel that he's definitely worth the risk. Would you agree with Dan that Maddison is exactly what the club needs right now?
I think, Marcus, you're getting carried away because I praised your pronunciation last week of Vicario so much that you now feel you're getting a bit arrogant, I think, almost.
Well, you know? Hang on. I reckon I can outdo David Pleat when it comes to pronunciations, that is for sure.
Yeah, I agree with Dan. I think you know, it's a 9 out of 10 signing, isn't it? I think in so many ways. I think, first of all, he's proven he's a great age at 26. You know, I mean, Maddison feels like he's been around for so long, but it's very possible that he could get much better, you know, in the next few years, and that's a really exciting prospect. I think he's versatile, which means he can play in different roles for Spurs. I'm sure Postecoglou has a specific position in mind for him, but equally, you know, he could play in a sort of central number 10. He played out on the right for Leicester in a sort of front three. He could play in the midfield three as a number 8. That to me would be a pretty gung-ho approach, I have to say. I would love to see it, but I wonder if you could have a sort of a midfield of Bentancur, Bissouma and Maddison, for example. It sounds incredibly exciting, but I wonder in the Premier League whether you can get away with that. And you know, I sort of almost, if there's any kind of asterisk, and I don't really want to put any asterisks in there, I guess, you know, his injury record is slightly patchy, and just kind of more broadly, why have Spurs not signed him before? Like, why has it taken this long? Like, I hear the idea that they've been scouting him for so long, you know, at Coventry, at Norwich. He's obviously been on their list for such a long time. It just kind of strikes me that this Maddison is such a kind of quintessential Tottenham player, that it's fantastic that they've got him now ahead of, you know, other clubs who are seemingly interested. But, you know, you think Christian Eriksen left, what, in 2019, am I right? You know, I mean, they've been looking
for... January 2020. Checked out kind of long before that, hadn't he?
Yeah. Like, it feels like, you know, Manchester City would have had a Maddison lined up, ready to take over from Eriksen almost straight away, whereas it's taken Spurs, what, 4 years, 3 years to kind of to line that up. And sometimes it does feel like Tottenham, the succession planning is sometimes a little bit jolty in these kind of areas, you know, and a shame that they haven't had him for all these years that he has been good. But I think brilliant signing, exactly what they need. And in some ways, it's a bit of a throwback almost. I think, you know, if we think about where Spurs are at the moment in their kind of approach, you know, getting away from the kind of Conte Mourinho era, yes, they've gone to Postecoglou, but this signing also strikes me as the kind of player that they signed 6 or 7 years ago, you know, when they were buying people like Alderweireld, Vertonghen, Dele Alli, these kind of slightly more straightforward, good players, but also good personalities. And it just kind of a little bit of a window, I think, into Daniel Levy's thinking as to how he can rebuild Tottenham maybe as well. And I think it's a fantastic start to the window for them. And it could be a great signing for a few years to come.
One little fly in the ointment, and I don't know if this is a reason why they've taken so long to sign Maddison. I mean, you can't escape your past now with social media, and these tweets have resurfaced from when he was 16 years of age. I've read them, something along the lines of how he loved it when Spurs got stuffed or something like that. And he wasn't a big fan of Gareth Bale. Is this, Dan, do you think going to cause any problems at all? We've got to forgive someone for what they wrote when they were 16, haven't we?
Yeah, I don't really care, and I don't think many Spurs fans should care. People do stupid things when they're teenagers. I'm really glad Twitter wasn't around, or if it was, I certainly didn't have it when I was 15, 16. Some of the stuff I wrote on Facebook was probably pretty tragic when I was kind of 18, 19 when it first came out. So I don't think it's something to be annoyed about at all, really. As Tom said before we started recording, I'll steal his point. I'm surprised that his agency didn't tidy those tweets up a long, long time ago, to be honest. I think they were deleted either yesterday or kind of shortly before the move went through, because I saw the Mail Online had done a story about it. So obviously they're gone now. But, you know, a lot of players have done this. I don't think it's anything to be concerned about. I mean, notably, kind of Spurs made it into a joke, didn't they, when Matt Doherty signed, because he had done some kind of anti-Spurs tweets and they got him to sort of read them out and delete them. I think Madison's were probably a little bit stronger and nastier, so they probably considered...
I don't think that would go down too well if you reread those now.
But didn't go down that route, but I'm sure everyone's aware of it and, you know, fairly unbothered by it. Just to pick up on something Tom said, which I kind of agreed with but also didn't agree with. I mean, I take the point about the kind of type of signing Madison is, but I also think that there's almost a case that Spurs have never really made a signing quite like Madison, which is why he's so exciting. You know, I really struggled to think of the last time Tottenham bought a player who was already in the top two or three in his position in the Premier League, absolutely bang in his prime, would get into any side in the country, and you know, include Man City in that, because I think he could and would if he, you know, went there and played for Pep Guardiola for long enough. You know, the last one was possibly Alderweireld, who had obviously had just a year at Southampton, but was already one of the, you know, outstanding defenders in the Premier League. But, you know, all the other ones you mentioned, Vertonghen had come from Ajax, which, you know, is a top club, but no guarantee players from the Eredivisie settle in the Premier League. Dele had come from League One. You know, most of Spurs' exciting signings recently have come from foreign leagues or have been younger players. So there are very few examples of Spurs signing a top player who's already a sure thing in the Premier League and is banging their prime. And that's what Madison is. And that's what makes this, I think, you know, great signing. For too long, Spurs haven't bought players that will immediately and obviously improve the first 11 straight away. There just haven't been enough of those signings. And Madison is definitely that. You know, he walks into the team in a number of positions, as Tom said. You know, I could see him playing as one of the two number eights, definitely, but he could quite easily play as an inverted left winger, or, you know, on the right, or as a number 10 if Postecoglou plays with a number 10, which he didn't at Celtic.
I guess it's almost like... sorry, Marcus, I was just going to say, I mean, I think you're right, Dan. I think it's almost like I'm mixing up my eras. I think you almost have to go back again, even beyond the kind of Pochettino years. So the early Daniel Levy years of kind of signing people like Jermaine Defoe, for example. Mm. I don't know, Robbie Keane, you know, these kind of guys, Jermaine Jenas, that kind of Kyle Walker, Tom Huddleston, you know, these sort of young English players who may not be kind of world-class, but was sort of proven in the Premier League.
I think that was a strategy of buying young British players who would improve and would potentially be the best in the world one day, or the best in the league. I think Madison's already there, which is what sort of sets them apart.
Mm. And the only thing I was going to say as well, listen, I know they're very different players, but Declan Rice, poised to join Arsenal for £105 million. I mean, he's a terrific player, but is he a £65 million more better player than James Maddison? And that's why I'm excited. I think we've got a terrific player for a decent price who's in his prime and should make an immediate impact. So well done, the club, for that. Now, Harry Winks is poised to go in the opposite direction. Boys, what are the actual details and the reasons why that deal hasn't actually yet been completed?
Well, it's a £10 million deal. I think for kind of various reasons, it's on hold till the weekend. But from what I hear, it's going to go through. And I think that just makes the Madison deal look even better, because even though they're separate transfers, it's a £10 million deal. So effectively, Spurs have got Maddison for £30 million plus winks, which, you know, seems like a very, very good bit of business on paper. I guess the only caveat is I thought that about the Højbjerg deal with Walker Peters, which was kind of similar. You know, we were told they were separate deals, but it was essentially a kind of swap between Spurs and Southampton. And actually, in hindsight, although Højbjerg's been decent, fine, maybe even good.
He's been good. Let's be fair. Come on, he's been good.
Højbjerg's been good. I think that deal has looked worse over time because Spurs have kind of struggled at right back. But I think this, you know, this is a good swap that's not a swap from Spurs, certainly. And I think Winks will, it's quite a fall for Winks. But I think, you know, he'll do well at Leicester. They feel like the kind of right kind of club for him, really.
Well, you've mentioned Højbjerg. A lot of speculation that he could be on his way. TA, have you got any news on that?
Yeah, it's interesting with Højbjerg. I mean, he really splits people, doesn't he? I mean, some people really don't see his value in the team at all. Other people think he's, you know, a bit of a warrior and was one of the better players of last season. I mean, I think he was in our sort of long list of players that, well, it's not a long list, but the group of players we thought didn't come out of last season too badly, I think, in our end of season review. I have to say, I tend to side on the more kind of favourable side of Højbjerg. I always think when you see him live, he's definitely one of the players who is always, and I know this sounds like slightly sort of almost, you know, basic, but I think he's brave. You know, I think he always wants the ball in difficult situations. He wants the ball even when Spurs are under the cosh, and sometimes when the atmosphere is turning sour, he doesn't hide, you know, and he's always, I think he is a leader in that way, in the way he plays, you know, and even if, you know, not so much in the dressing room, but I think in the way of his example of the way he plays, I do think he has a certain courage that I wouldn't extend to the whole of the Spurs squad. That said, I do think, you know, in an ideal situation, if Postecoglou wants to kind of come in and inject a little bit more craft and subtlety into the midfield, and I can understand why he might be someone you think, okay, he's got a couple of years left on his deal. You could probably get some good money for him, and you might be able to strengthen that midfield in a different way. He wouldn't have been on my kind of top five players to get rid of, put it that way. There are others, I think, at Tottenham, excuse me, who could be shown the exit door faster. But I can understand that he probably has a slightly bigger value for the selling market. I think basically Spurs are open to selling him. I think he's open to a move. And I think the situation is it will depend on who comes in and how big that offer is. And that's kind of the situation at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, I've never fully warmed to Højbjerg. Although I was very harsh there by saying he'd only been okay. He's obviously been a good signing. And I think the last difficult, if, you know, 3 or 4 years would have been worse, yeah, had he not been there, frankly. I think in a way he's almost suffered due to the fact that he has been so favoured during this spell, if that makes sense. He's almost kind of associated with the Mourinho tenure and almost the Conte tenure in ways that other players aren't, I think, just because he was such a favourite of both his managers. He played more or less every game under both of them when fit. He's barely missed a game, you know, to his credit. For, you know, how long has he been there? Three seasons now? Four? Is it four seasons?
Feels longer, but yeah.
I can't even remember. Three or four. He's barely missed a game in that time anyway. So, you know, he almost feels like he's kind of part of this sort of mini era that we hope will come to fall between two much more exciting periods, you know, the Pochettino era and, you know, what we hope will be an exciting new chapter under Postecoglou. That's not his fault, but I can see why, you know, he might want a fresh start, and I can see why the club, you know, might be willing to move him on. I think given that Bentancur is not going to play till, you know, at least September, and then that feels probably a little bit optimistic, there might be value in keeping Højbjerg for another year, unless, of course, there's a kind of holding midfielder that Postecoglou likes and rates who Spurs are lining up.
Well, we'll come on
shortly to who might be next to join the club. Just on Højbjerg, I feel he's a little bit unlucky. Had Spurs got a really good team or had a very good team over the past 2 or 3 years, I think he would have been the absolutely perfect cog to do all the ugly work. As you say, always available, always fit, always ready to get the ball in a difficult situation, always
up with a goal at a key moment. So I do feel a bit sorry for Højbjerg. I think in another era, he might have been regarded as one of our very best players. And if he does go, I wish him all the success in the world. Now, last week, I did mention that Eric Dier was poised to get married. And indeed, he did get married at the weekend. We did have a spy in the camp. Unfortunately, I can't identify this spy. What I will say is that he or she doesn't know much about football and was not very good at recognizing many of the Spurs players who were there. But he or she did confirm that, unfortunately, Harry Kane wasn't there, and therefore he or she was not able to pin him to the chapel and say, you do want to stay for the rest of your life at Tottenham. And he was going to say, I do, moments after Eric Dier had said, I do, to his delightful model girlfriend. So that didn't happen. She was able to tell me that Dele Alli was there. She thinks it was Danny Rose who was there. Moussa Dembele, I believe, was there. And she also said there was one other player.
Was Vertonghen in there?
Well, that could be it. She said it. Yeah, she said it was a player who began with V. And I'm pretty sure it was Jan Vertonghen. He was there.
Unless it was Vicario, straight in.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was Vertonghen. I'm not impressed with our spy. We didn't get much gossip. But anyway, further speculation. Is it Harry Redknapp who is now saying that Harry Kane is building a house? Is it near the Chelsea training ground? I don't know what we're meant to read into all of this. But obviously, Bayern Munich have come sniffing. And there does appear to be some potential interest if the price is right. So, boys, we thought, at least last week, we suggested that Kane would see out his contract. Is that now looking less likely?
I'm still trying to think of Spurs players beginning with V. I've got Bedran Korluka.
I think it was Vertonghen.
We're very tight, I think. They used to play board games and chess together, and they
hold. That's true, yeah.
So I'm sure it was.
I'm
looking forward to getting the info on this spy when we're off air.
I think there's a lot of bluster there from Marcus Dan last week.
I'll give you an exclusive.
Big stories. Yeah, know, and he's come in with a list of the squad list of Tottenham 2014 or something. So yeah.
I've got a useless spy in the midst, unfortunately.
So I think the situation with Kane is that, I mean, essentially, I think with all these things, there's always sort of three moving parts. So you have Kane, you have Tottenham, and you have Bayern in this case. And I think essentially what we know is, you know, we did this story in the Times, yesterday or a couple of days ago now, with a friend of the pod, Constantine, who's very well connected in Bayern circles. And what we know is that Bayern made a proposal. You know, we're sort of talking about the semantics here of the word, because Spurs insisted there was no official bid, but we know that Bayern made a proposal to around about 65 million, 60 million plus a few million in on top of that for Kane, and that was knocked back. We know that they have been given encouragement, basically, to increase their bid, and they intend to put in another proposal to Spurs in the next few days. And I think it's worth saying, because, you know, as happens in these kind of things, you know, stories get aggregated on social media and people say, what on earth does that mean about, you know, Kane approving Bayern, you know, making another bid. And what I think it kind of means really is that, you know, big clubs in these cases, and they make these kind of big bids, they don't do it unless they feel like they have the backing of the player. And that's not to say that they've, you know, agreed all the terms, all the kind of intricate details of contracts, you know, far from it. But what it does mean is that they have the feeling that the player would be interested in the move, because otherwise they wouldn't be making huge bids. It's just not how it works. So Bayern feel like they have at least what they are calling an informal agreement, some kind of verbal green light, if you like, from Kane, that it's worth their while increasing their offers. And Tottenham's stance at the moment is very much they don't want to sell Kane this summer. Well, that doesn't necessarily say very much. Nobody would want to sell Kane. But they're not saying that he is unsellable. And so the big question here is, where is the line that Tottenham feel like Kane is sellable? And are Bayern prepared to match that? And the reality might well be, as we've already seen with both Manchester United and Real Madrid, who have both already come knocking this summer and both felt the price was too high, it could yet be that Bayern will be the latest club to come in and fall by the wayside because they feel like Tottenham's price is too high. So let's see. 60 million, in my opinion, still leaves quite a large gap to make up. I think that Spurs basically want the negotiations to start at 100 million, which leaves a lot of ground to be made up yet before we really get to any kind of real serious negotiations.
Do we agree, though, that if Bayern did offer £100 million, and I'm the last person who wants to see Harry Kane walk out of the door, but if they did offer £100 million, Spurs would be mad not to accept it, wouldn't they? With the prospect of him playing for one more year in an embryonic team under a new manager who are not even in Europe, does it not make sense to sell him now and think deep down he could come back in a couple of years' time, still be relatively fresh at 32 or whatever? He can go until 35 or 36, break all the records. To me, that does make a lot of sense at the moment.
I think if Kane's leaving, then I think Bayern is, to be honest, the least bad option in the world. I mean, you know, to go to Bayern Munich is extremely inoffensive for Tottenham. You know, he can go there, win trophies. It's not causing anyone really any bother, you know, much less than him going to Manchester United or, you know, Chelsea or even, I think, Real Madrid. You know, there's a feeling that Bayern is kind of in a different world almost. My personal opinion is, and, you know, whether that matters or not at all, really, but my personal opinion is that Tottenham should never be selling Harry Kane. I just don't think that it ever makes sense for them. You know, I can see from a business point of view, yes, it does. But I just think Tottenham can't replace Harry Kane. Even if they have 100 million, they cannot find a striker in the world who is going to score the goals, create the chances, give the connection with the fans, all that he symbolises, everything he brings to the club. It's irreplaceable. And 100 million,
but
by
Tom,
the way...
But Tom, for all of that, and I agree with everything you're saying, for all of that, Spurs have never won any silverware with Harry Kane.
But it can get worse. It can get worse.
On Spurs, Marcus.
It can get worse. And I think I said this before. I genuinely think that if Spurs didn't have Harry Kane this season, we would be talking about a team in the bottom half of the table. It can get worse. There's nothing to say that Tottenham will just continue to be a top six team without Kane. I just don't think it makes sense in any way. And I think you have to back yourself as a club to think we keep him, we do better next season, we finish in the top four, we buy Maddison, we buy another couple of good players, Postecoglou comes off, and suddenly there's a different momentum about the whole team and the whole club, and Kane wants to sign a new contract. I think if you're Daniel Levy, you have to back yourself to do that rather than say, okay, we've got 100 million, we can now buy what is the equivalent now of 90% of Declan Rice. I mean, that is what the market is now. 100 million doesn't get you very far, particularly if you're Tottenham and you can't afford the kind of wages that will sign a 100 million player anyway.
Dan, sell or keep?
I think the element I quite like in selling him this summer is something you touched upon there, Marcus, which is that it would give Spurs control. I think that has to be appealing. And I haven't heard this mentioned anywhere, but I have speculated on it in a piece. If you could say to Bayern or even Real Madrid, you can have Kane for 100 million, but we can buy him back for 30 million in 2 years. Or 20 million in 3 years, then you not only have control on where he goes, but you have control on where he comes back to in the very, very likely event that he would want to come back to England and can finish the job of breaking Shearer's record, which if he left this summer or even next summer for overseas, he would surely want to do because he's not going to break it in 1 year. He'll need at least two. So I think that would appeal to Spurs. They desperately don't want to see him join a Premier League rival this summer. They won't sell him to one this summer. That's what they've said. And they wouldn't want to next summer, but next summer they won't be their choice. You know, if he doesn't sign a new contract, he could go to Man U or Man City or, heaven forbid, Chelsea. So I do think that's a factor. I kind of feel like the club's damned if they do and damned if they don't, to be honest. I think it's got to the point with Kane where there isn't really a right or wrong solution for me. I think selling the club's greatest ever player, and he is Tottenham's greatest ever player now, I think, is a huge decision. And I think there's a strong case, as Tom says, that you should never, ever do it, whatever the circumstances. It would rip the heart out of the club. He's, by a country mile, their best player. You would lose 30 goals a season immediately, and potentially have a side that would be in danger of, again, as Tom said, kind of slipping into the bottom half of the table. Equally, there's a case that, do you want to spend a year building a whole new look team under Postecoglou around one player, only for him to walk away at the end of the next season for nothing, which you're powerless to prevent? You know, have Spurs become too reliant on him? You know, there are lots of different factors in this. Ultimately, I think, unless Spurs are getting an offer that they just can't refuse, so I'm thinking well north of 100 million, which I don't think Bayern are going to go to, then Spurs shouldn't really be considering it. And the reporting today from Germany, for what it's worth, is that Bayern don't want to go above 86 million. And if that's true, if that's the case, then I think this is a non-starter, because I think Spurs will be starting negotiations at £100 million. And if Bayern are only willing to go, you know, 14 million under that as their final offer, then I don't see how the clubs get anywhere near each other.
For what it's worth, I think Bayern is a slightly underwhelming option for Kane as well. I mean, I think it was always going to be the case, if he was going to leave, that there would have to be compromises made, that Kane was going to have to compromise, obviously, on Shearer's record, probably to go abroad. Tottenham would have to compromise because obviously they lose Kane. I mean, no one was going to get the perfect scenario for everyone. But even in that context, I sort of think Bayern is... I do think that in England, we can slightly underestimate what a massive club Bayern Munich is in Germany. I mean, I think it's, you know, it because it just consumes everything over there. But equally, if Kane goes over there and wins a couple of Bundesligas in 2 years and reaches a semi-final of the Champions League, maybe a final, they might win the Champions League under Tuchel. It doesn't look like they're about to win the Champions League, I have to say. It just seems to me, I don't really know. I mean, you know, you don't have the kind of cachet of playing for Real Madrid, for example, or Paris Saint-Germain, I guess, maybe, if you're playing alongside Mbappe or something like that. It doesn't tick that many boxes in my opinion, but obviously it's entirely Kane's decision.
Well, I think you both made fantastic points, actually. I totally agree with you that Spurs, you know, in the normal face of everyday circumstances, should not be selling Harry Kane. I also think Dan's made an excellent point that Spurs could be in control of the situation if they do sell him and have the power to bring him back. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. This one is going to rumble on. In the meantime, obviously...
It's just one thing there, Marcus. One thing just to point out. I do think if Bayern, for example, spend 90 or 100 million on Kane, they're not going to accept a clause being put in there where Spurs can buy him back in 2 years. You know, that's just... You know, from a Spurs point of view, it might feel like a kind of like a quick loan. But if you're spending 100 million, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, it's, you know, serious money. It's going to be a player they want to have for 3, 4, 5 years. And presumably they're spending that money because they think Kane is an athlete who is going to carry on deep into his 30s, a bit like Benzema, a bit like Lewandowski. So the best Spurs could probably get would be maybe a first option or something, you know, to get him back. But I don't think they're going to have control over the timing. They might have control over the first option, but I don't think they're going to have a control over getting him back anytime soon. So,
maybe that's a reason why they should accept a little bit less and have that put into the contract. The other thing I would say about this, if Kane does go, and fortunately he's not really had any injuries for the past couple of years, but there were those successive seasons, weren't there, when he was out for a while. And the one thing I did notice... When he was out, other players did tend to step up to the plate a little bit. I haven't got the stats in front of me, but I'd love to look back to those seasons. I remember he got injured at Southampton at Christmas time. He was out for a while. I seem to remember that Spurs actually did do well when he was sidelined. And of course, if he was to go, then the likes of Richarlison has got no excuse. He's going to play every week. You come and show us what you can do, mate. And you're a good player. And Sonny, step up to the plate. And with if we got £86 million, we can get another decent striker in there. So I actually do think, you know, you've got to use your head above your heart, which Daniel Levy's very good at doing. And if I had to be pushed, I do think they should sell him this year. But I do, and I agree, Tom, they've got to make it absolutely clear that they have first option to get him back, if that is possible. Listen, we could go on about this forever and ever, and it's upsetting even to think about him going. Who's next? We've got the goalkeeper. We've got the creative midfield player. We know we desperately need a central defender. We mentioned Tapsabar last week. You know, we could do with a couple more players elsewhere. But Dan, what else is sort of bubbling under the surface at the moment?
Well, I think centre-half is next. Yeah, you mentioned, is it? I don't want to do a pleaty here and get the pronunciation wrong.
Tappy, we call him.
Tappy, yeah. Or Edmund. I think Edmund is on the list. Mickey van der Ven, seemingly on the list as well, and Longley as well. I think maybe Longley could, you know, if Spurs can get a cut price deal for him. I think, you know, he was a good character last season, even if he isn't a top centre half. I don't think anyone would kind of object to him coming back. So I think that'll be the next area. I mean, one thing we have learned in the last couple of days is that Dyer, you know, wants to stay. You know, that's the kind of word from his camp. You know, maybe his new wife has kind of got into him and said, we're staying in North London. You need to get your spy on that, Marcus.
I will.
But so I mean, I think there's still, you know, players to shift there. I mean, Sanchez, Tanganga, you know, I can't see a future for either of them really, or Roden, who's coming back from loan. But I think once pre-season starts, which it, for the non-international players, it does on Saturday. For the international players, it will still be another couple of weeks. Then Postecoglou will start making judgments on kind of players he doesn't want, areas of the squad that he needs. And I think it was obvious that Spurs would need a goalkeeper. It was obvious they needed a creative midfielder. And so the Maddison and Vicario deals were kind of, you know, easily done early. But I think the rest of the window, you know, that it might be kind of down to which players Postecoglou thinks he can work with, which of the returning loanees does he think actually he could get a tune out of. You know, Ndombele, for example, could Reguilon have a part to play? Players like that. So I think that there's still a lot of business to be done. There's a lot of players to be cleared. But some of it might now depend on kind of a bit more on what Postecoglou's seeing day in, day out on the training ground.
I haven't had any more dreams about Ndombele recently, you'll be glad to know. But yeah, there's a lot of intriguing possibilities with regards to the players that have come and have gone out, are coming back now. I mean, actually, I just want to mention Reguilon. I actually, you know, I liked him. I was surprised that he was booted out. Do you think there is still a chance that he could have a future at the club?
I think the reason he was in my head is because I actually read a report from Spain saying Postecoglou doesn't trust him.
Right. Okay, he's gone.
So he was in my head. I mean, who knows? He will be back, I think, on Saturday because he's a non-international player at the moment. He's not in the Spain squad. I mean, it's easy to say with hindsight, but I think, you know, Spurs would have been better off if they'd have kept him, not Sessegnon, last season.
100%.
I'm not sure I've seen enough from him to suggest he's a kind of Premier League fullback. He's looked a bit erratic and sort of lacking composure to me a lot of the time. So I'm not sure he's one to bank on.
That's like the two attributes most required of a Tottenham player. Lacking composure, a bit erratic. Get him in the team. Anything else either of you wish to mention before we close this latest edition?
I mean, I think Reguilon didn't have a great season last season for Atletico. I think he probably wanted to kind of relaunch his career over there. It didn't quite happen. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. I tend to think he would have been a better bet than even Perisic for most of last season. But I don't know. I don't see Postecoglou going for him, but let's see. Maybe preseason will change that. I mean, I someone said the other day that Spurs are still keen on another central midfielder. I think the defence will now be a priority, and they will look to get that done next. All the targets Dan said, but I think they might have a central midfielder on their list as well. It might be a sort of younger one rather than a kind of premium, instant starter. So that might be one to keep an eye on. But yeah, then it's kind of the sales. You know, there are so many players, aren't there? Sort of, what, 8, 9, 10 players that Spurs could get rid of. So it will be all about who might impress in pre-season, and otherwise who they can get good money for.
Okay, well, thank you. That's T.A., Tom Allnut of The Times. D.K., Dan Kilpatrick of The Evening Standard. Apologies to D.P., that's David Pleat. Listen, your pronunciations aren't that bad. Well, they are, but, you know, you're a knowledgeable man. We like that. We'll get David on the podcast one week. Our plan next week, actually, is to do the podcast from Wimbledon, from the championships. There's a lot of tennis folk who are passionate football fans as well. So that is our intention. I will speak again to my spy. I'm not giving any clues away, but get confirmation of the V person. I'm sure it was Vertonghen. And maybe he or she will remember some other bits of gossip now that the champagne is starting to wear off. But apparently it was a lovely wedding, done very, very well, as you would expect from an international footballer. But thank you, guys. Thanks for listening to us. Do give us a review, assuming it's a good one, on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram, at The Tottenham, where you can follow us all on Twitter too. We'll be back next week. I'm Marcus Buckland. As always, come on, you Spurs.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.